and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and thanks for listening with us tonight. Tonight I have with us Diane Collins, and we're going to talk about her new fabulous book, The Answer When You Can No Longer Figure It Out, Quantum Think It. So, hi, Diane. Tell us a little bit about you, where people can find you and your book, Quantum Think It, and how you came to write that book.
Okay. First of all, let me just say, because you said where people can find me, I'm in Miami right now. That's one place they can find me, in one dimension, right? But on the internet, my website is Diane Collins. It's Diane with two N's, DianneCollins.com. Everything is there, all about my book, my blog. I blog on the Huffington Post, and there's lots of audio and video. And the book is called Do You Quantum Think? Do You Quantum Think? New Thinking That Will Rock Your World, and it's in hardcover and in all ebook editions, and it's available everywhere books are sold, and of course on the internet. So thank you for letting me share that information, Eva, and I'm just so thrilled and delighted to be in conversation with you.
Well, thanks for taking time with me. I think what you're doing, you know, we talked before the show about what you're doing with corporations, and I think it's very important to help mass consciousness shift, starting with corporations. I've always said I wish that lawyers would learn about consciousness, you know, conscious intention. It would change everything, I think, because lawyers kind of direct the world.
Well, you know what? I have some really interesting news for you with regard to that. First of all, I agree with you. And, you know, I'm talking about my partner, who's my husband for 25 years and been working together for that long, delivering Quantum Think mostly in major corporations, some agencies of the United States government, to the general public. And 99% of it via teleconference. And I deliberately designed it that way. But so this Quantum Think is something, it's a system of thinking. It's a system that puts together 21 principles and practices for the mind and awareness. But the basic shift is to go from thinking that has conditioned all of us, even those of us on a conscious path for many lifetimes, since birth in this lifetime, that we're still very much conditioned by the prevailing worldview and the assumptions and beliefs of that worldview. So, you know, why did consciousness and related topics, things that Dean Radin, you know, thank goodness is studying in the ions, put together Edgar Mitchell to research the nature of consciousness, because all of us know consciousness as the ground of being. But what I wanted to tell you about the lawyer, so Quantum Think is to have us, my quest in life is that we go from merely knowing it conceptually or even intuiting it or even experiencing it from, you know, intermittently, or some of us are more in an established state of that heightened awareness of awareness consciousness. But for me, it's how do we have humanity go from knowing it, espousing it, aspiring to the great virtues of compassion, unconditional love, kindness of the heart, joy that comes from the just being alive. How do we go from knowing that to actually living it, to being the walking, talking embodiment? So that was really when I know you wanted to say, what are you all about? But I have to tell you something. So I wrote this blog on the Huffington Post in November, which as of this show is about, I don't know, 6 months ago. And I was going on the radio for, you know, to discuss do you quantum think and what's possible. And I was on all these shows and I kept saying, Eva, we need a new narrative. You know, we need a new narrative that displaces the conventional consensus, you know, dominating narrative that is now in the news and in the culture in general. And I kept saying this, and then I realized, hello, hit myself over the head. You're the one. I would tell my, you know, our private consulting clients, listen, if you see something, if you are tuning into something that other people are not seeing, then it's, you know, it behooves you to step up and do it. You know, but one of my spiritual teachers says, you know, instead of waiting for the light, step up and be the light. So I thought, well, why don't I take my own advice? So I wrote this blog, and it's called There's a New Mainstream Out There, and You're Probably Part of It. And then in the body of it, of the blog, I said, well, you know, I've been on these hundreds of shows. There are all these people having these conversations, wanting to elevate consciousness, wanting to understand the faculties of mind, the power of mind, how this all works in, you know, what role do we play in creating reality, and I know you and I are going to get into that a little. But anyway, I wrote this blog, and I said, I call it the consciousness crowd, because kidding, you know, just half kidding around a few years ago, I didn't like the term New Age, so I was trying to refer with Pavel, my publicist, who I know is a friend, I think, of yours, and as well, and I said, well, you know, the consciousness crowd, he goes, anyway, so it became almost like a tongue-in-cheek expression, the consciousness crowd. So I said, there's a new mainstream, and I call it the consciousness crowd. Well, what I wanted to tell you, which relates to the lawyers, is that, first of all, this blog went viral it has 11,000 likes on one little blog on the Huffington Post, 3,200 and growing Facebook shares. But what happened is a lot of people contacted me, Eva. And one of the people who contacted me is a lawyer, a woman, and her work, which she now calls Cutting Edge Law. And she was working on her second book, probably by that title, which is being published by the American Bar Association. She already had a book, so they asked her to do another one. And she says she's a nomad. She travels around the world for the last 7 years just researching and looking into other more conscious ways of dealing with the law and the judicial system. And she was writing to me to ask me, could she excerpt, which was a pretty big excerpt, from my blog to put into her book, Cutting Edge Law.
Well, if we can only get the court system to do that.
Yeah. Now, isn't that pretty interesting, though,
uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
I love
it. Wonderful.
I'm really excited about it. I don't know when the book comes out, but I think I'm going to be meeting her, because she's coming to a conference here in Miami on restorative justice, which I'm also, I'm sure you are very interested in that topic. Anyway, the other thing is that the quote, the cover quote on my book is from Roy Black, who is a high-profile criminal attorney. He does other than criminal, but, you know, like white-collar kind of criminal cases. Do you know him or of him?
No. I'm removed from the legal field for, gosh, since about 2010. I'm a recluse. I live in the middle of the national forest, and I don't ever even see anybody. Don't have any news, don't watch TV. I'm not there anymore.
Well, you
but
know
I'm
what?
I'm thrilled that that's
you
happening.
Can, yeah, and Roy Black said this book should be required reading for all literate human beings. And he wrote in the bigger blurb inside, and my publisher picked that out. And he did the William Kennedy Smith trial years ago, and he represents very high profile kind of people. And it wouldn't be someone who would typically, as he said, this is not your ponderous self-help book, you know. And yet he totally gets it. And my husband and I have worked on.
So let me ask you about this.
What?
If every single thing in a law office is about two people fighting, and it's always over money, and attorneys like to build hours, how are you going to get them to not mind not billing those hours?
Well, that's a very good question, isn't it?
How are you approaching? I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I'm just curious because I've thought about it many times over the years. How are you going to do that?
Well, there are a lot of ways you could look at that. You know, one way is that, and we would call this, changing the circumstances, which is not necessarily the most powerful way. But if you look in the different various dimensions of it, one dimension is the business, that particular business model, how attorneys make money, right, by billable hours. So that's one way you could look at it, is that create a different business model so that their remuneration is not contingent upon, milking the client, so to speak.
So what would it be?
Well, I don't
know
what
it'd
be.
Even if it's not the client.
I'd have to think about it. But I think that in terms of consciousness raising, that there has to be that awakening of that which we call humanity. You know, we call it humanity, but writing a new book, have we ever really been humane? But we know that there is that aspect in every single one of us.
Certainly.
That
so
when
if you...
that awakens, I think that happened for you. When that awakens, everything you're doing shifts because you're working within a higher dimensionality of purpose.
Certainly. If you had an opportunity to make a suggestion or propose to a judicial office of whatever sort that it was, what would that proposal be? I mean, how would you propose that they start? Because granted, it starts one by one and, goes through person to person and office to office and business to business. But how would they start? What would be that first thing that you would teach them to get to convert them from money and greed to having a law practice of integrity? And they all think they have integrity anyway, but we know about that. So where would you,
tell
them
to start? Well, the first place
I would start,
because this is my, my lens on life.
But let me just finish this thing.
Okay.
Wherever they start, they still have the wolves on the other side. So how do they deal? How would you propose that they deal with those wolves?
With the rules? Well, I've been trying to get Roy to work on this because there are certain... But let me just answer the question, where would I start? And, what you're asking a very big question here. But
it is
the
a big
first
question.
Place that I would start is with a restructuring of thinking, an expansion of thinking, because you have to look at it this way. If our patterns of thinking give rise to our actions, and therefore to our results. And this is a result that you would say your experience, you know, the result of you, what we would call your moment-to-moment experience, so something like an internal result, meaning how you experience life or a situation from moment to moment, how you related to it, the meaning you give it, and that gives you your experience. It would be a relational result, how we connect with other people, the quality of that, or whether it's an outer result, what are the hard results, houses, money, cars, you know, business results, how much money do you make, scientific experimentation, those kind of things. But, so if you could say that our patterns of thinking give rise to our results, and you wanted a different result, and what we ask, what I ask, is if thinking creates reality, what's creating your thinking? So the first place that we would begin is from a new context for thinking. Because, you know, and it comes to the same, what I call the modern day mantra, because everyone quotes from the Einstein quote, which he said it very, you know, many different ways. The problems we have cannot be solved with the same level of thinking that created it. Now, I don't know exactly what Albert Einstein meant by that, but it's a great, you know, it's a great line, and it's that people can connect into that. Now, the way that I've related to it is to say is because of my discovery, which is that this is a universe of systems, and thinking takes place as a system. And the thinking system is based in the assumptions of the prevailing worldview. Now, we're in a, you know, obviously systems interpreting systems, penetrating systems, but we're in a quantum age. So we're at a stage in the evolution of humanity, of consciousness, of life here on this planet, at least. And we're still very much conditioned, including the institutions that were born from the assumptions of the industrial age scientific materialism, also known as classical mechanical worldview. So when you look at that and you say, well, how did we end up with the institutions we have? And I like to use, for an example, the education. In conventional education, if the scientists of that time declared only matter is real, physical matter, okay, everything looks separate, let's figure out what's going on out there external to us. And you studied what in school? You studied the physical matter, the brain, maybe the brain connections. But we didn't learn about intention. We didn't learn about the faculties of mind, intent, intuition, meditation, which I considered not just a practice, but an actual faculty of mind. These faculties of mind are the ground of being. And so if we're, you know, and I'm sure you know how Dr. Bruce Lipton, how he talks about, well, if physics is the fundamental science, because it's studying, well, what's the nature of anything? You know, what's the nature of reality? And the physics, the model that physics is working from is limited, or I use the word limited, not necessarily wrong, but let's just say every model has its own limitations. If that model is limited and or has inaccuracies, or at least limited, when we look in a fully, more fully dimensional way of life, rather than just, you know, the classical reality of ordinary objects, then every other science that's built on that physics is going to be flawed from the start. Now, this makes sense to me. I'd like to know what you think. And so when I'm, you know, I was given, let's say, I didn't pick quantum think, it chose me as the vehicle for this to come out in this way, to give people another access to the more expanded and up-to-date worldview as it comes through your thinking. So this was a way of me sharing about how I think and the work that I'm doing, but also to say, how would I begin with lawyers, or how do I begin with any of these corporate senior executives that we've worked with for many years, and they're wonderful. They're, you know, everyone has their brilliance. Is you have to start there, because otherwise you're pushing around the pieces on the chessboard. So it's like this, Eva. It's that if reality is if there's no absolute fixed way that reality is, and of course the old world physical based five sensory reality has silently trained us to see circumstances as fixed. Of course, perceptually, we perceive it that way, this slow-moving, dense energy. And yet we know at another level that's, you know, not the case. It's not fixed. So I look at, well, how do the scientific insights map onto our thinking? Now, the first thing you have to see is that whatever your beliefs are not necessarily the, quote, absolute truth. So if there's no absolute way that anything is other than what we think of as source, then what is shaping reality? Context. So if you're working in most conversations are taking place at the level of content, you know, should we have abortion or should we not have abortion? Is this person guilty based on this set of evidence or is he not guilty? You know, all these kind of what I call content-oriented conversations that in order to come up where something new gets evolved, something, you know, you're going upward on the spiral, seeing from another vantage point, that means creating a new context. And because we use thinking very much as one of the main activities of mind in the everyday world, then it requires a new framework for thinking. And the framework for thinking involves knowing something about consciousness and our role in expressing it, and how that relates to what gets created in the world.
I agree with all of those things, but I still didn't understand. If you went into a Fortune 500 law firm or business, say, and who's not into systems theory, how would you get into, when you got into the CEO's office to meet with him, how would you get him to listen to you? Because that's the problem. The people that, the people that are on the path, who are on the cusp, waking up, they're interested in it. But
right.
Most people who are materialists out there, they're not interested in it, and they can't hear it. So how do you get them to hear it and put these into practices? Because putting these kind of, let's just say in a law office, say you were a big plaintiff's lawyer and you did medical malpractice, catastrophic medical malpractice, and your client lost both their legs. Your client wants dollars and cents. Your insurance company doesn't want to pay any dollars and cents. How do you get not only the two lawyers willing to cut their fee, but also you have to affect those two clients to get them to do the right thing? So what would you say to those people who didn't call you and say, we want to change, but you're going to them saying, hey, we can change the world if you do that? How do you get them to hear it?
Well, I'll tell you how we do it, okay? And I feel, and if, again, we have been doing this and successfully for more than 20 years. And I think that, well, if you start with what do people really want, and really when I was younger, this is where I started. People say, well, how did you invent quantum thing? But you start with, you don't start with going in and saying, let me tell you how to think about this, Mr. Joe, CEO, right? We say, Mr. Joe, okay, Joe, what is it you really want right now? What do you want to create?
He's going to say money. And the reason I'm asking you this is because there, you know, you're doing this work, but there's, you know, I don't know how many billions of people on the earth.
Eight,
so there will be other people that come out from behind you that will want to follow your path, read your book, and understand so they can too can help change the world. So,
okay, great.
That's where I'm going. How can you teach the future teachers to get in the door and actually have someone listen to them?
Well, I can tell you what we do. And I can also say, I want to say simultaneously, that what every one of us has wisdom that's coming through us uniquely. And, you know, one of the things that what I lovingly call the old worldview thinking, you know, as distinguished from new worldview that quantum distinguishes, is that we develop formulas, you know, that the scientific way. Observe the data, categorize the data, make conclusions about the data, and proceed
what
to live
data?
From those.
What
any data? Any okay, but let me answer your question more directly, because I want to just make the point that if I say, well, this is what I do, okay, and then someone goes out and tries to replicate what I do, well, that wouldn't be living from one of the quantum think distinctions in the 21, what I call distinctions of thinking, is called moving from success to mastery. That's the time we're in now. So what does it mean? Mastery is looking from what's right and what will work now in this situation. And formulas are important, you know, obviously business processes, best practices, and all that kind of thing. But if you want to create something new, if you want to have people go to a new level, then looking at how someone else did it is not, you know, it may not be your way. But so I just wanted to say that as a little bit of a preface to this, because
so
it's not like you're going
to
copy.
Then.
What?
How do you teach
this is,
them to think?
This is what you do. You bring your presence to them. Now, what everyone is interested in, let's say whoever you want to work with, you want to know, what is it they're interested in? Because once everyone right now everyone listening to this, I'm sure, we all talk about, you know, the great shift, we're in a great time of transformation, we're in this evolutionary stage where we're taking a leap in consciousness, we have to do this consciously, it's not going to just happen on its own, I don't know, we could discuss. But the idea is that every person is feeling this, it's like a cosmic pulse. And so even if they're not articulating, even if they've never been, most of our clients have never been on a conscious path, they don't even know what, you know, it just wasn't in their repertoire, let's say, of reality.
So what do you tell them that doing what you tell them to do?
This is what I ask them. I don't tell them. I ask them, what do you really, if I came to you and I said, what do you really want? What do you want to accomplish now? Now, what I was going to say is everyone knows they have to think in a new way, but they don't know how to get there. And they don't even know what exactly that may be. They think new thinking is a creative idea, but it's not just an innovative idea. It's a new framework. It's a fundamental shift in the perspective. So the first thing you work with is what they really want, because people are interested in the result that they want to achieve or accomplish. And when you start there, then you can open a conversation. Are you open to a conversation about thinking that will actually have you get there and have you get there? You know, it's not like a sales pitch, but, you know, mm-hmm. you'll get there faster and easier. And then what we do is we distinguish the limits of your current thinking, because the limits of your current thinking are what the limits of your current results. So in order to go beyond your current thinking, you would have to be able to see, distinguish the limits of it. If you can't see the limit, you can't get beyond it. So we kind of start from there. And people who, you know, most people are interested in that because mm-hmm. they know they have to go to a new place. And they're very interested. And then that opens the way, Eva. And the way that I have, you know, the way that I've written Quantum Think and deliver it is in such a way that anyone can understand it. So, and, you know, I've had people, we used to work in a major, well, we still do actually, but, you know, we've worked a lot in the telecommunications industry, where there are a lot of engineers, you know, people working with those systems, those physical systems. And I've had people say to me, you know, I'm an engineer. I'm really an old worldview thinker. You know, I think in terms of the scientific materialism, what you can see, what you can feel, you know, they haven't really looked at what is it to consciously use the faculty of intent and understand how that connects, you know, vibrationally, how that brings about a different result, or how your intent actually shifts the field of resonance between you and the team, who you're working with. So, I mean, it's not like you're saying, I have something that you don't have. No, because right there you're creating separation. Now, quantum thinking, the very first principle is holistic and holographic. So the first thing is inclusiveness. And it's like, let's see. So you brought up that case, well, which I know is a very real thing. You know that industry that you brought up about the insurance and the law, and how, you know, the insurance companies are trying to get not to pay, but meanwhile, the person who had the accident, they need the money, right? And that is what I call a least action pathway of that culture. Least action pathway, least action is a hyphenated word, the least conscious action, the most mechanical action, the least creative action. Least action pathways, which we have individually, these are the automatic and mechanical actions, the way the energy or the thought goes, simply because it's been that route before. And in industries, there's the media has least action pathways. What went wrong is wrong or will go wrong. I mean, that's the least action pathway. The media, you have it in the family. They're relational. So in the insurance industry, that's the least action pathway of that culture, right? It's like, we want more money for our company, therefore we're going to pay you less, therefore we're going to pay people to try to figure out all the loopholes so that we don't have to pay you. Isn't that kind of
the tendency?
It'd
be nice if they just have integrity and treat one another like they want to be treated.
Exactly. Now, that's where the awakening comes about. Because when people who are, and, you know, there's in corporate cultures the same thing. And when you look at the old worldview, the industrial age worldview conditioning, right, the mechanistic, reductionistic science. So how did that show up corporately? It shows up in what the word they use in corporate culture, silos, like everybody's separate. You know, it's divided up. It's separation consciousness. So, you know, you're accountable for your part over there, and I'm accountable for my part. But so what happens is you're in this vortex, this energetic vortex of these least action pathways that are separation consciousness, that are silo thinking, that are, you know, I can't step over there, or how do we have this work for everyone, which is one of the quantum thing practices. They're not yet in that. How, you know, and what you're saying, yeah, that's the idea now, is that, well, if people were connected, not just conceptually, you know, like, yes, I'm a good, you know, my faith is my most important thing, and then go out and attack and, you know, slander and everything else that people do to each other, I say that's not an actual choice. That is in no way a choice. That is just the mechanical least action pathways of the state. I like to say, blame it on the old worldview. Like, there's nothing wrong. What if there's nothing wrong with us? We've just reached that stage in human evolution that we are ready for this conscious awakening to happen on a mass scale, where we know from at least studying history whether that's, quote, the truth or not, but at least the knowledge that has come to us, where there's always been the handful of the enlightened ones, the awakened ones, the great beings, the self-realized masters. And so now it's time for all of us. And yes, when people have that shift in consciousness, no matter what culture they're in, everything else shifts. And you see it, you know, we do see these small news stories. I think that happened to you, right? Where all of a sudden it starts to shift, where you realize, what am I doing? You know, because you connect to that place of integrity. And you realize, you know what? I'm not going to make those choices. They think they're making choices. I say it's the myth of choice. But, you know, I'm not going to be taking those actions anymore from that place of the either or. The, you know, we're separate. The place of, you know, oh, trash the earth. Why do people trash the earth? Because we need to have that integrated experiential knowing awakened that we are the organisms upon which the earth is our living host, just as the organisms are on our body, we're the host of. So there is, where are we asleep in our culture? This is the awakening that's taking place. So when you, to go back to your very important point about anyone in this conversation with us now, well, how do we go out? How do each one of us go out and have that shift occur in our presence? Is that we bring our presence. It's not like I was going back to saying, I know something and you don't. No. It's that I'm distinguishing something. In quantum think, I call this a new worldview of learning, the art of distinguishing, to bring something into someone's awareness in the present moment in such a way, using the nuances of language, that they actually experience it. It's present for them. And the way that we do that is through our own presence. If we're not present, you can't really get any, then no one else is. But because we exist in fields And there is this continuous exchange of energy, intelligence, consciousness going on that when you are established in your awakened state, you'll know what to do. See, no one can really tell you, okay, Eva, this is what I want you to do. You know, like, I don't tell my clients, okay, you want your team or the person, you know, your CEO to do this, or, you know, we have clients, they're establishing new business models in their corporations, things that have never been done there. And these are, you know, 100-year-old corporations where, we do it.
Can you give us an example? Because I'm interested in hearing about that. what would be one
I'm really wanting to tell you, but I feel it would be divulging.
Don't tell who it is. Just tell the kinds of things that people are doing. I just think that it would be interesting to see how they're starting to change. Can you do that? Not tell who it is, just tell a change.
I'm trying, even if I say what this is, but let me try to think of another one.
Just say it from a business perspective. You don't have to tell what kind of business it is. You know, are they changing the way they treat their employees? Are they changing the way they're treating their...
Yeah, okay, I'll tell you one. I'll tell you one that I can tell. There's one current one that's very exciting. It has to do with the law, but I can't really... In a corporation, but I can't... Okay, I'm not going to talk about it because I better not talk about that.
Okay.
But right. I'll talk about another one, okay?
Okay.
This I can talk about. And this happened with two different companies that we worked with. We were working years ago in a company that everyone would know, and they have, you know, different business units of their company. And there was one business unit that was acquired. It's a consulting firm, actually, but a very, you know, well-known big one. They acquired this consulting firm, and they made it, you know, part of this. They merged. But the part that was acquired, it wasn't small, by the way. You know, this is like international, very big companies that we're working with. But this particular business unit, because they were acquired, they felt that they were like, they called themselves, like the stepchild of the corporation. So they weren't respected. They didn't get invited, how it showed up. They didn't get the resources they needed, financial resources, you know, people resources that they felt they needed to advance the business. They weren't invited to important meetings. They were like the like the stepchild, like, woe is me, you know, like the Cinderella or something. And what we had them see is that they were the ones actually creating that result by the way that they were holding it in their own consciousness. And I won't go into the how we get them to do it, but basically they had the awakening that because...
But that's the important thing, how you get them to do it.
Well, that's a process, as I have them say, because I have them say, okay, intent. And I make a distinction, Eva, between intent and intention. Intention being an end result, measurable, you know, definable. Intent being more like an activation of the energy intelligent field. That is like an omnipresent tense, you know, of this energy. It's sort of like you're having the energy become coherent by virtue of your intent. But we're always carrying something in the field of our intent. So I have this distinction, four aspects of knowing. How are you related to what you know? Meaning, what you know is what defined by in me in this case as what you hold in awareness. So how are you related to what you know? You can be related in unawareness, which you're flotsam and jetsam on the sea of life. It's like, you know, you're just... Whatever comes into your mind, you're reacting, and that's it. You can be related conceptually, which is the scientific worldview conditioning. that, you know, that's the separation where, oh, that's a good idea. It's a mental construct world where you're not actually experiencing, feeling it in the feeling tone of your being. That's the second aspect of knowing. So we have unawareness, conceptual. The third aspect is intuitional knowing, where you feel, let's say, if it's a result that you wanted, well, I kind of feel like, yeah, or, you know, this is going to happen, but I'm not really sure for sure. And then the fourth one is participatory knowing, in the sense of how, but you probably know of John Wheeler, the physicist, who said that's a participatory universe. So it's like participatory knowing, that is the domain of intent. That is where you know yourself as the seed, the blossom, and the fruit of your results, of your experience. So we're talking about consciously generated intent, but it's not positive thinking like, I'm going to put a positive affirmation on top of a negative belief and hope that it all works out. It doesn't, because that's not the dynamic. So it's not a cause and effect dynamic. But so what we have this in this corporate example I'm giving you, the business unit, have them realize that we're always holding participatory knowing of something. And it's usually not one thread. It's that we may be holding, well, you know, I want the company to treat people better, but, or let's say in this case, a real case, this business unit, we want to be respected, and at the same, and we deserve to be respected, and at the same time, they're saying, we're not respected, we're the stepchild, we were acquired, therefore we don't have the same prestige. So I would have them do an old worldview circle, literally, and a new worldview circle on a piece of paper and say, okay, what's in the field of your resonance? Are the good, the bad, the ugly, and the sublime? What's coming out of their mouth? What's in their conversations with one another? What's in their mind, that the thoughts they're having? This is making up your resonant field.
So I have a question quickly.
Okay.
Sorry. When you say whoever you're talking to, are you talking to like a department head in the acquired unit, or are you talking to somebody overall in the company that the original company and now over the acquired company? Who are you talking to?
In this particular case, it was a small group of leaders, about 10 leaders of a big business unit. Okay.
Of the people that were acquired?
Yes.
Or the people that were already... So how would a department... I guess the department would have their own budgets to come do what they wanted. Is that the way it works, kind of?
No, but they still have to get it from, you know, the top management. They still have to get it from the top management.
I think it's interesting how the underdogs came to, you know, to...
How they hold. In the quantum think system, it's called transformation as distinct from change. It's a very important distinction because we're trying to change something, but we're holding in place in our resonant field, and it's coming out, you know, spewing forth from our lips, the very thing that we don't want. So as long as they're holding themselves, so what I'm, the point of, a very important point, you know, in doing this in quantum thinking with people is to see that however you're holding a situation is not the fixed and absolute reality. And therefore, we don't have to even put any attention or energy on that reality because you're holding it in place. It's the same thing as women saying, oh, there's a glass ceiling, but I shattered it. Well, you're still in connection. You're still holding a glass ceiling in place. So it was like that. So once they realize that old worldview circle is there, what we call an unaware intent. The intent is shaping the resonance. It's, you know, stimulating the frequency of the resonance, and that resonance is attracting to them the exact circumstances that they're putting out in their resonance. That's how it works, right? In science, sympathetic resonance. You're going to attract.
I can see two things happening. I can see physical reality perhaps changing, but also perspective of what was really happening.
Exactly. And it starts there. You know, now this is a very interesting point you're pointing to. Anyway, so you see what I'm saying? They drop that because they see it's
we
not
have five
quote,
minutes,
the
by
truth.
The way. We have 5 minutes.
Okay, they drop that. You wanted the example. And then they create a new statement of intent to live from. And you know what they created? This is real. They created, we're the jewel of the organization, because they were a smaller business unit. And they just, it's a chose. It was a choice to live from that perspective, as you just pointed out, Eva.
How long did it take?
It's instantaneous.
Now, how long did it take? How long did it take for their
you mean for everyone to start
for everybody to get on board and recognize it?
Well, they start. It starts immediately because you know when we're working with them, we have them actually devise. Well, how would you know if that happened? And they say, well, we'd get, you know, 3 calls this week inviting us to meetings that we never got invited to before. So they'd have that would be the evidentiary. So it starts immediately because this is, I think, what you brought up, an important point about looking at the distinction between the physical and the non-physical fields, which is the relational field, because in a relational field, you can shift that instantaneously. And then it's a quantum field. It's in a field effect. You know how you know Carl Prebrum, right?
Mm-hmm.
About his work. Maybe.
Well, I don't know him personally,
him.
But
I
certainly know his work.
Okay. And so he said, you know, once you open up that brain connection, right, and there's a novelty introduced, then it's a whole brain effect. So this is what he came up, right, the holographic brain theory. So my work is about is having us actually live that in daily life. And that happened with another company too, where they, like a few months later, another completely different company, but a similar situation where they weren't respected because they were the ones selling to the competitors in the company. It's a whole thing, you know, in telecommunications it works that way. But because it's a lot of collaboration between, you know, so-called competitors. But what happened is they got acknowledged by the CEO in a big corporate meeting. And so things, the actual results happen, but everything begins in the non-material realm of thought, intent, feeling, tone, resonance, however you want to say it. And that's how we can co-create with this, what we all call consciousness, this intelligent field over which I know you say, right, we're not, the movie is there, but there is something that we've been granted to be able to use it. It's like maybe we didn't invent it, or we don't always, we can't control the circumstances. But as I've heard you say, and I say it often, we have 100% jurisdiction, absolute sovereignty over how we choose to relate to those circumstances. And when we make that shift in perspective, everything in the field, we're not used to relating to the field as a conscious way of life because we're conditioned by the old worldview. And we're looking at, you know, we're looking in the physical, or what do I have to do to get that? Push or pull on an object to get it to happen. But when you start working with the field, with what is invisible, with the relational fields, everything shifts with it.
We're out of time now, but I want to say one thing. It looked to me, listening to all this, that you guys have come up with a new language My husband's an engineer, so he talks engineer language. You know, when I talk to him about the things that I talk about, and from a perspective of consciousness, he doesn't always get it. You guys have come up with a new language that doesn't frighten off businesses.
Exactly.
You know, they don't. It's a different language than woo woo, but it means the same thing. So it's a great job. So tell us one more time where we can find you. For somebody that might want you to come into their business and help them?
I would love that. But I would love anyone to explore. Anyway, you know, we do all kinds of things as time goes. We just started a LinkedIn group called Quantum Thinkers. You can research that. You know, just search it on LinkedIn, Quantum Thinkers. And every week I put out a discussion of some aspect of this as it applies in business and life. And my website is Diane Collins, DianneCollins.com. And
thank you.
I want to thank you so much. Thank you, Eva, for letting me share all this. I really appreciate it. And you hold such an amazing, expansive space for these conversations. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's been my pleasure. Thanks for taking time for us. Have a great one, Diane, and come back sometime.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night.